move into a dangerous area of our psyche, our psychology. It is the place where the driving force of fear and insecurity reigns supreme in us. This deep place within us that is very hard for most people to understand is based in pride. And that's what Lhasa is talking about in this beautiful sutra. Praise and disgrace cause fear, he says. Honor and great distress are like the body. What does it mean that praise and disgrace cause fear? Praise leads to weakness. Getting it causes fear, losing it. This is why praise and disgrace cause fear. Most anything within us causes fear. The fear of lack. The fear that someone is taking something from us. If you look up the word pride, it is a feeling or deep pleasure or satisfaction driven from one's own achievements. The achievements of those with whom one is closely associated with. From these qualities, we acquire possessions and are widely admired. Yes, this losing of our pride is a huge problem in people's lives. I have seen it in my work with students and people who come and go. When the moment their pride is bruised or even approached, and they have to look at it for what it is, they become deeply afraid. Afraid that people are going to see that they are incompetent. They are not the person that people think they are. The pedestrian mentality is always looking for those things that bring adoration in order to compensate for the great lack, requited love, unrequited love. And this is why we have so many disappointments in ourselves and in our lives. So the great fear exists within us that we are just not enough. Maybe there's someone who's better. I had a man come to me in session work years ago. And he had a very nice wife and children. And he came to me on the QT and said, I am so afraid I'm going to lose them. What if they find out that there is a better man than me for them? And then he gave all the reasons why he was not the person that they thought he was. And it annoyed him that they thought he was much more than what he felt he was. We worry. We worry about not getting what we want, and we dread losing what we have, and we button ourselves up and try to hide all of this until we just can't anymore. We scrutinize our friends. We're constantly keeping strangers away from us. We fill our everyday lives with all sorts of precautions. And still, we worry about the future and what it will bring to us. This is what Lhasa is talking about. We are nuts. And we just don't really realize it. One of my very favorite stories is one I want to read to you. It's a little lengthy, but it's well worth the read. And every time I read it, I get tears in my eyes because, well, you'll see why. A young man who had bitter disappointment in life went to a remote monastery and said to the master, "I am disillusioned. I am disillusioned with life and wish to attain enlightenment to be freed from these sufferings that I go through. But I have no capacity for sticking long with anything. I could never do long years of meditation, study, and I just don't have it within me. I would relapse and be drawn back into the world again, painful though as it is. That's what would happen to me. I know this. Is there any shortcut for people like me?" "Oh," the abbot said, "there is, there is. If you are really determined, tell me, what have you studied? What have you concentrated on most of your life?" "Well," the young man said, "really nothing. My family was rich and I did not really have to work that hard. I suppose the thing I really was interested in was chess. I spent much of my time on that." The abbot thought for a moment, and then he called an attendant, such and such, a monk, told him to bring the chessboard and men. The monk came with a board, and the abbot had him set up the men. He set a sword, a very sharp sword, on the table. "Oh, monk," he said, "you vowed obedience to me as your teacher, and now I required it of you. I require all of it. You will play a game of chess with this young man, and if you lose, I will cut your head off with this sword. But I promise that you will be reborn in paradise. If you win, I shall cut off the head of this man. Chess is the only thing he's ever tried to do and worked hard at. And if he loses, he deserves to lose his head." They looked at the abbot's face and saw that he meant it. He would cut off the loser's head. So they began to play. With opening moves, the youth felt the sweat trickling down to his heels as he played for his life. The chessboard became the whole world. He was entirely concentrated on it. At first, he had somewhat of the worst of it. But then the other monk made a couple of great moves and seized the chance to attack. Finally, the young man's position crumbled. The monk saw in the face of the young man intelligence, sincerity, worn with years and years of disappointment. And the young man saw in the face of the monk the very same thing. He saw intelligence, sincerity, worn by years of effort to awaken. He thought of his own worthlessness. It would be a shame for him to die. But me, it would mean nothing. So he deliberately made a blunder, and then another blunder, ruining his position and leaving himself defenseless. The abbot was watching. He leaned forward and upset the board. The two contestants sat there stupefied. "There's no winner. There's no loser," said the abbot. "There's no heads to fall here. Only two things are required." And he turned to the young man. He said, "Complete concentration. Concentration and compassion. You have learned today both of those things. You were completely concentrated on the game. But then in that concentration, you could feel compassion and the sacrifice that you were playing for, your own life and the monk's life. He looked at him with loving eyes and said, "Stay here. Pursue the training. In the spirit and in the effort that you played this game with." He did so and eventually became awakened. You see, the young man put aside his pride. All of his achievement, he achieved only one thing, and that was playing a game. But he could see in the face of the monk the austerity, the beauty of what that did to him, the purity of it. He was not interested in winning any longer. He realized that there is something wonderful to live for, something greater than his ambitions and his pride could contain. This is a very beautiful thing in a human being, and how few of us have this. People will come to me, both in hospice and in counseling, people I've worked with for years. They pay no attention to what I'm trying to offer. And they'll say, "Why did this happen in my life? And why did that happen in my life?" And I look at them, I shake my head. It's as if you didn't have a teacher. You can't remember the things that are essential. Everything happens so you can be here with me, helping you awaken. You want praise? Well, with praise comes disgrace, because there'll always be someone who's better than you at anything. What does it mean? What does a life mean? Should it be garnered with praise in the fear of disgrace? Praise leads to weakness, because we need that adoration. It is a drug that most people fall for, never understanding what they're really falling for. What would be more important to you? Thinking that you could heal the unrequited love within you if your parents were alive, if they could say, "We're proud of you," blah, blah, blah. Or that you had vengeance upon your worst enemy. What would be the motive of your whole life? If you sit with yourself, really sit, can you discover your motive? Why are you here? Are you here just to get through each and every day and find as much pleasure as you possibly can? Try to free yourself of your pain? Is that all it is? Pain comes with having a human body. Disgrace comes, as Lhotse said, with having a human body. It is a difficult thing to live in one of these things. But to give up our life for the sake of seeking pleasure over pain and priding ourselves on it, which many people do, is only delaying what is inevitable. I have to face myself. I have to face the Gregory and what he is really all about. And instead of being prideful of him or hating him or feeling disgraced by him, I seek neither praise nor condemnation. There's no condemnation in this story. The monk, the master, he knew, he could see what was going on. There was a transformation going on in the young man as he played for his life, so he thought. And he was willing to give up his life for the monk. who couldn't play as well as him, but there was this compassion within him. He could see, I have lived for nothing, but this man has lived for everything. Everything that is meaningful. It is best that I lose this game and I am beheaded. But of course, that didn't happen. The master was right. You were completely concentrated on the game. But compassion took over. Not winning, not losing. Compassion. Look at everything you do. Everything you've done. Was there compassion in it? I know people who have done a lot of very, very self-destructive things in order to position themselves financially. I also know a few people who did everything they did out of compassion. And as they positioned themselves, they gave and forgave. And these people are unique. They don't make history. Nobody knows about them. A lot of people would say they were foolish. But these are people who can care for the world. They understand the world. They understand what is noble, what is virtuous. And when they see that in a person, they are drawn to it. Just like the young man was to the monk. We have to ask ourselves, what am I drawn to? What is the most important aspect of my life? What am I doing with my living? Is there goodness in my living? You will not receive recognition for following the way. Not at all. Let me read you something here from Chuang Tzu. Walking in the way leads you forward, but you will not achieve recognition by boasting. Arrogance denotes failure. No merit is gained by self-conceit. Leadership is not attained by flattering others or insulting yourself. Be true to your way and find the way. Not many people are willing of this. I want this to be our meditation here at the end. To let go of our pride. To purge our pride. With compassion. To put aside right and wrong, good and bad. To put aside greater and lesser. And just focus on one thing. The true art. To have mercy. A profound sense of mercy. Where the state of love is imminent. If you do this, if you are of the ilk to do this, you will never lose what is most important. You will never lose your sense of goodness. Always put the goodness of others ahead of your own. In doing so, you will merge with the great compassion of the universe, the great goodness of the universe. Don't let your mind fool you. Put the goodness of others ahead of your own desires, your own pride, and you will have found the antidote to the unrequited within you. Let's meditate together. Walking the way leads you forward, but you will not achieve it by